Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, your host for these first couple segments. We will have Shad back with us in the back half of this show. And boy, oh boy, there's a lot for us to talk about this week because of the fact that, look, we all knew that this week was more data heavy and central bank heavy, but I don't think a whole lot of us expected the pivot that we got out of the Fed and the pivot party that followed through for the markets. It's a very interesting time for markets to recap what happened on the back of the Fed statement, and even more so Jerome Powell's press conference, but also what some of the other central banks did. In the first half of the show, I'm going to be chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, to focus on what the Fed did and what the implications could be throughout not just next year, but the next couple of years. And in the last half of the show, we're going to be focused more on the resource sector for all of you investors, especially in the stocks. Now, as I mentioned, I'm chatting with Mark Chandler. Mark, I have to give you credit. I read over your website, mark2market.com, every week and almost every day. And the day before the Fed meeting on Wednesday, so on Tuesday, the headline article that you put out outlined the fact that we could see a Fed pivot just based on some of the inflation data that we saw earlier in the week. You're one of the few that was truly on board with this that hadn't been on board, let's say, before this meeting or even in this whole last year. So, Mark, I got to ask you, what caused this? What caused the Fed to pivot in your eyes?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. Sometimes, you know, they say better to be lucky than smart. And I think it was just a question of trying to connect these dots. And I had thought that the Federal Reserve is pushing in this direction. That is the direction. I'd put it like this. Two times you stand pat, that's a pause. You stand pat three times, that's a halt. And I think that even the hawks on the Fed, like Governor Waller, had seemed to be content with being patient, just standing pat. And I thought that that would signal the end of a tightening cycle, which is quite remarkable. Before the Fed tightened, the market was sort of upset, that critical of it, because they thought the Fed should have ended QE earlier, should have raised rates earlier. So we get this, but the Federal Reserve, of course, at the time, like many of us, including myself, thought, well, inflation is just transitory. And lo and behold, inflation gets higher than people thought, quicker than people thought. And now it's all these other reasons, globalization, de-dollarization, higher oil prices. They came out with all these stories about why inflation is going to stay high and why it was structural. And yet it's begun falling. And so I also thought that behind the Fed's decision to pause for the third time, meaning it's going to be done, was the fact that Q3 growth over 5%, unsustainable. And I was looking at relative sharp decline in activity here in Q4. And I thought if someone like me could see it coming, I think that the Fed would see it as well. And I think that that's the striking thing about the Fed statement. Despite the dramatic response, the Fed statement barely changed. What it changed was its assessment of the economy, and it said that the economy is growth activity is slowing from a strong pace in Q3. And they said that inflation has eased over the past year. They recognized that inflation had fallen over the past year. That's a new phrase, has eased over the past year, but remains elevated, a repeat of what they said before. They also added one other sentence, one other word, actually, in the rest of the whole statement, one word that also softened their stance, made it a little bit more dovish. And that is, they said, in determining the extent of additional policy firming. That's what they said before. In determining the extent of additional policy firming, this time they inserted the word any. Sounds kind of small, like we're really like nitpicking here. But this is the kind of, when people want to try to understand the Fed and get into like Fed speak and Fed thinking, you really have to assume that every word has conveyed some meaning. And by modifying additional policy, by saying any additional policy, it softens it, meaning that the Federal Reserve also thinks it's done. I think that what surprised me from the Federal Reserve statement and Powell was that up until now, the soft landing view, which is you can get inflation back down towards target without causing a recession or without triggering a sharp rise in unemployment. And I think the Fed had been hopeful. Of course, policymakers, investors, everybody seemed to be hopeful of a soft landing. But this particular statement and this particular press conference, I think, was the most passionate, full-throated embrace that the soft landing is here. And Powell made a comment during the press conference where he acknowledged that the Fed saw the risk of being too high for too long and that they were going to work against that. So in order to get a soft landing, it's not only good enough, it's not only sufficient to raise rates, shrink the balance sheet, but you also have to be quick in turning because of the lag time. If the Fed were to wait too long, and then they'd be stuck with the recession and they'd be blamed for it.
Well, Mark, this all ties into the Fed's projections here and this sweet spot that it sounds like they're looking at here when it comes to inflation. And that is clearly their main focus and how they're conducting interest rates, what they're doing with interest rates over the next, I think it's 2 to 3 years. The Fed is projecting that inflation continues to grind down to around that 2% target. And it sounded to me like that was Powell's reason that the Fed would keep cutting rates because they're following inflation. It almost seems like their sweet spot is, again, that 2% inflation level and the Fed funds rate right around, let's say, 2.5. Is that really the dream scenario that the Fed is looking for?
I think it is. I think that's becoming so. Rather than being like, I think Powell talked about how the path, a narrow path to soft landing. And I think the Fed feels more comfortable that the path is widened out, making it more likely. And so, yes, I think that with a couple of points I'd make about the Fed's new forecasts. One is that they are recognizing that inflation is going to continue to fall, but it's going to take till 2026 to get back to 2%. Before we get back to 2%, though, the Fed's going to begin cutting rates. They anticipate cutting rates. They think that as the latest dot plot shows scope for 3 rate cuts next year. The market is pricing in. It looks to me like the market is pricing in the better part of 5 to 6 rate cuts by the end of the next year, which seems to me to be very aggressive. But here's what a lot of people, I think, miss, especially those who do not have this luxury that and this privilege that I have of just being able to spend my days watching the markets intensely and going over these Fed comments and statements like with a fine-tooth comb. And what not fully appreciate, I think, from the outside of this, of like the church, if you will, the Federal Reserve and the Fed followers and everything. And what I think what the Fed is focused on would be something like this, that what they think, what the part of the interest rates that affect the economy most directly, they would say, is not the nominal rate that you see, that you have on your credit card, that your bank pays you on your savings. But the key rate for them is what's called the real rate, inflation-adjusted rate. And so as inflation, if we keep the nominal rate the same, same target, 5.25 to 5.5, and inflation falls from, say, 6% to 4% or to 3%, the real rate is rising. And so the Federal Reserve, I thinks that the way they're going to suggest what's going to happen in the first few cuts are not really going to be easing policy. The first few rate cuts will be to maintain the current level of restriction. That is to prevent the level of restriction from rising too much. We need a restrictive policy. Core CPI is 4%. So we need a restrictive policy, but as inflation falls, policy is becoming more restrictive. It's sort of like maybe people are familiar with the options market, that you're long an option, say an at-the-money option. As the stock moves or the stock or the commodity moves in your favor, you are getting longer and longer, right? Your delta goes from, say, 0.5 at the money until it's very deep in the money, and that's almost a 1.0 delta. How much, right, the option moves for the underlying stock. And that's really what happens with interest rates. As inflation falls, real interest rates are rising. And so what the Federal Reserve will say is that they have to reduce nominal interest rates, cut the Fed funds target, so that The real rate stays the same, restrictive, but not overly so, risking a recession.
All right, Mark, we do need to carry this over to the markets because, look, it was a pivot party that almost all sectors were doing well. We saw a big rotation in the small caps, commodities, precious metals did well, energy did well. The only loser was really the US dollar. Even bonds got a buy as we saw yields continue to move down, the 10-year move under 4%. Big question is this going to continue? Because the markets are ending the week on kind of their back foot, but it's still going to be a good week for markets. And we did have Fed head Williams pushing back on Friday, trying to clarify, actually saying almost the exact opposite of what Powell said in terms of, hey, there still might be a rate hike. We don't need to talk about rate cuts yet. It didn't seem to have the same impact on the markets as Powell's comments. What do you think about this pivot party and just how bullish everybody seems to be?
I think for the important thing I think about this pivot is it's not just the Federal Reserve. I'd say the interesting thing is that several other central banks met this week, and it seems like everybody acknowledges that even though there's some risk that they raise rates, they're going to keep that play that up. I think on balance, everybody thinks the ECB is done, the Bank of England is done, the Swiss National Bank is done, and this week Norway was the only central bank to hike interest rates, and they're done. And so I think that we're at the end of the post-COVID monetary tightening cycle that was not just in the U.S., but global. So we've got a global reduction in interest rates. And I think that how the markets responded was it turns out that the rise in interest rates was a bigger weight on equity markets than maybe people thought. Not only in the U.S. making, say, some of the indexes, some of the measures near record highs, but the same thing is true in Japan. Same thing is true in Europe. Very strong stock market rally despite weak economies. It's really the falling interest rates as a driver. I'm concerned that what Williams said today, trying to push back, it's not. I don't think that anything that I heard from Powell did not say that there was a 100% chance that the Fed would cut rates in March. And yet that is what the market is pricing in. Even now, after Williams, the market's pricing in about an 80-85% chance of a hike in March. That does not seem to be a. I can't blame the Fed for that. I don't think there's anything that the Fed said to make it sound like a rate cut was imminent. So I am concerned then that the pushback will be more serious. And think about what's happened this week. The U.S. reported stronger than expected retail sales. We did get the bounce back in industrial production, manufacturing, and back months were revised a bit lower. So the jury's still out, perhaps. But what I'm looking at is shortly after we come back from New Year's, the U.S. will report the next jobs data for this month, December, and the early call is for about 160,000. Yes, it's slow, and maybe another a tick up in unemployment, recouping a little bit of what it fell before. So I just don't think the economy is rolling into the kind of state they would get the Fed to cut rates in Q1. And I think that's what Williams is telling us. And so to me, what that means for the market is that we should expect that this has been a bit of an exaggerated move on interest rates. Maybe the 10-year, we should expect to go back above 4%. Maybe it's 4.25%. The 2-year has fallen roughly 80 basis points in the last 2 months. That also seems a bit excessive. And so as interest rates back up, I think the dollar might get a bit of traction. It may bounce as well. And I think that that'll weigh on the stock market.
But are these just going to be short-term moves? Because even if the 10-year moves to, let's say, 4.25%, that's still a long way off of 5% that we were staring at just a couple of months ago. And the dollar, it moved down drastically. Yeah, it bounced at the end of the week, but it's still in the 102 region. If we do get at least a little, I guess, turn in this pretty aggressive trend higher that we've seen for many markets, would that just be short-term weakness in what seems like longer-term uptrends?
Yeah, I think that's what more or less what it's going to be. We've had this such a strong move, and less than a month ago, the narrative, what I'd say was the consensus or the conventional narrative from Wall Street was that the bond vigilantes were going to make a stand in the face of a larger, endless U.S. budget deficit. All the supply, the bond vigilantes had their fill. And instead, we've gone the exact opposite way. And so sharply, I think it's just begging for top pickers, those bond vigilantes who got their fingers burned, try to make another stand.
Okay, so it does sound like a more bullish outlook than here. What could turn this around then? Would it simply be higher inflation data, simply because that's what the Fed seems so focused on? Or would it be weaker economic data, although it sounds like the Fed is already expecting that?
So the risk to this, right? Because despite like all these great minds focused on the markets and everything, and how few, no one really predicts things for, it's very difficult. Maybe it's like Yogi Berra. It's difficult to make predictions, especially about the future. And so the range of possibilities. And I look at the end of the year, I look at where people thought, consensus views, medians and surveys, where people thought things were going to end this year. And we very rarely are we close. And I often think when the consensus is close, it's good because it's lucky rather than like smart about it. I mean, I think that we should expect a short-term move, but I think that in the bigger picture, I think what's going to happen is we shouldn't expect really good news from Europe, the UK, that is, the EU, anytime soon. Maybe not until late next year at the earliest. Japan is struggling. You see this, despite having a currency that's about 50% undervalued by some purchasing power parity metrics. The Japanese manufacturing sector is still contracting. We just had that PMI, flash PMI for December. The manufacturing sector is still contracting. And so I think that we should expect a relative slow growth next year, maybe not a recession in the US. And that's the other thing, we haven't talked about it. Next year, 2024, over half the world is going to go vote. Mostly it's national elections, but there's a bunch of local elections too. We begin off the year, a key one would be in Taiwan, but not only do we have the US election, EU parliamentary elections, India has elections. So we basically a lot of elections, and I already think that the shadow of the elections is beginning to hang over the markets. And so I'm looking at what happens during the fourth year of a presidential term in the US. So what happens the year of the US election? Very rarely does the stock market go down. So that's a regularity. It's not like a law. It's not like must be the case, but just give me a small bias that we probably should not expect a big sell-off in stocks next year. That it could be that seasonally or cyclically small up year. And what does it mean about the Fed policy? I think that Fed policy, we've seen the Fed change rates. A lot of people have this in their head that the Fed can't change rates too close to the elections. And yet, when you really look at the historical record, Fed has changed rates, adjusted policy in September ahead of a November election, and it's adjusted policy in November after the elections. And that's what could happen this year. We have a September FOMC meeting. We do not have one in October. And then we have one again a couple of days after the election. So it doesn't necessarily affect the pace or what the Fed's going to do. They've done it. The historical record shows they've done adjustments within that framework. The other economic regularity, I think, is that very rarely does the economy contract in the fourth year of a presidential term. So I'm thinking that the US economy grows below trend, which the Federal Reserve trend growth means non-inflationary growth level, which they say is about 1.8%. And I think for most of the year, we'll grow below that. And then I think that we get the recession when everybody gives up on it for being wrong for a couple of years. It comes in 2025 when whoever's in the White House, that new president has to deal with it.
Oh, how many times have we seen that, though? Hey, the new president, the recession gets pushed off onto them. And well, it's going to be a pretty nasty year, I think, anyway, with all these elections going on, especially in the US. Let's talk currencies and let's also talk gold then, because look, there's no denying that the US dollar got crushed on the back of the Wednesday statement and press conference. Gold did really well. Some of the gold stocks, especially the majors, did really well. What stood out to you in terms of any currency moves and with gold, please?
Yeah, sure. Let's begin with gold. For me, a lot of people you talk to, Corey, probably tell you that the reason gold is high, the big buyer has been central banks. And people say this is de-dollarization, all that. But I don't know if I really buy that as de-dollarization, partly because some of the biggest central banks buying gold are allies of America's, like Singapore, Poland. China's buying gold, but when you think about that, they have $3 trillion of reserves. The amount of gold they're buying, we're talking about single percentage point changes. So I don't see it like that. I tend to think about gold the way I do, similar with currencies. If you tell me the direction of the dollar, and the direction of US interest rates, I have a good idea, not always right, but a good idea of where gold's going. So the big rally we had in gold, that had been Wednesday and Thursday, I think, was because of a big drop in interest rates, big drop in the dollar. Buy gold. But if I'm right about a pushback against these low interest rates, that the market's getting, the central banks don't want the markets to ease for them so early. If they don't really want to ease rates, they'll say, even if they want to ease rates in March, by the market doing it now, it really like could be self-defeating, could fuel the exact inflation that central banks thought they've started to put that genie back in the bottle. So I think that gold comes back down and tests those recent lows, call it 1975 or so. That 200-day moving average spot gold is about 1955. And that's what my level has been, about 1950 as a reasonable buying opportunity if you think that gold is going to go higher as interest rates around the world begin falling sometime next year. Currencies, different
On that
story.
point, sorry, Mark, on that point though, that is still long-term bullish gold then, right? Because if all central banks are going into an easing scenario, even if markets do well, it does look like gold can do well on the back of that as well.
Exactly. So in the big picture, I think that the dollar topped out, not this year, but really late last year, September, October. Remember sterling down at 103 to the dollar, a record low. A euro is around 96 cents, extremely low. And purchasing power parity basis, they're just like unreasonably cheap. So I think the dollar topped out then. It's been a challenge this year because of the a year of two halves. A first half of the year, the dollar was relatively soft. Dollar top bottoms out mid-July and has had a good second half of the year until more recently. So I fully agree that looking out to 2024, I'd say lower interest rates, a broadly weaker dollar can help lift gold, and to really retest that high we saw earlier this month at 21.35. That seems to be like the reasonable target, and still gives you like a 5%, a little bit better than a T-bill type of return on a relatively low vol instrument. Currencies, I say, it's part of the whole story. I mean, part of the reason I have gold strengthening in the big picture is partly because of a weaker US dollar. I'd say that, with all these other central banks meeting, a noteworthy thing is that while Powell and the Federal Reserve are going to continue to let the balance sheet unwind at roughly a $95 billion a month pace, they haven't said when they're going to stop that. Many people in the market think it's going to be finished by the end of first half. But it's interesting what the ECB did. So they first pushed against the idea of a rate cut. Market really didn't fully buy that. But what they did say was they were going to accelerate their balance sheet unwind in the first half of next year. They had this program that they were buying bonds under called the Pandemic Emergency Purchase Program. And so they're not buying any more bonds there, but they're reinvesting the maturing proceeds. Well, they're going to reduce the amount of proceeds that they recycle until the end of next year when they do none. So at the end of next year, they stop recycling all of it. So that seemed to be a more hawkish message. And the euro got a little bit above 110. And today we had a very poor PMI readings from Europe. Many of the economists had expected an improvement, but we saw it go the other way. For example, the Eurozone composite fell to 47.0, down from 47.6. So bottom line here, weaker Eurozone economies got the market to shrug off the real pushback from Lagarde and the tightening of the reduction of the balance sheet, and have taken the euro back through 109 here. So it's a full cent off of the highs. And I think we see some follow-through selling next week. The big story, I think, next week, people are going to be focusing on, even though it's the holidays, getting ready for them, is the BOJ's last meeting of the year. That's what's given us some volatility in the yen. The market had thought, it gets spooked, it sort of scares itself sometimes, thinking that the BOJ was going to exit. It's, if you remember, minus 10 basis points overnight interest rates. And a case can be made for them to exit their policies, but most likely they're going to continue with them. And for me, the key here is that when would we want a central bank to adjust, whether it's a target or adjust policy? Not when they're under pressure and have to. Right now, with the JGB yields falling back off, they're about 25 basis points off their recent highs. The recovery of the yen gives the Bank of Japan, it takes away the urgency for them to move, but that's why exactly they can move without being as disruptive. But I talked to Japanese officials, and they tell me that's simply not the Japanese way. So best guess is that the Japanese do nothing. Backing up of U.S. interest rates helps give the dollar support against the yen, and maybe we can go back up towards 145 or so.
All right, Mark. Thank you very much. I think that brings us up to speed on how you see the markets playing out through not only just next year, but into the following year and the significance behind what the Fed did this week, as well as how it plays into other central bank policies. Sounds like next year is going to be a year of gradual easing from central banks, and we'll see just if the markets continue to party on. But boy, oh boy, it's even on the weakness to end the week. It's been a very strong week and a very strong month and a half now. Mark, thank you very much for your time. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Everyone, stick around. I'm going to be right back with a bit more of a focus on the resource stock side of things.
Corey, good luck, everybody. Happy holidays.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.